Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. World Stroke Day happened this weekend, and today we're talking about ways to prevent strokes, how to tell when someone's having one, and then what to do next. One in six people will experience a stroke at some point in their life, and it can happen to anyone of any age at any time. And what matters most is how you respond. Most importantly, how quickly you respond. Joining us now in studio is Dr. Nima Mauzun. He's the CEO of Fort Myers-based Telespecialist and is certified in neurology by the American Board of Psychiatry and Neurology. In 2010, he developed the Rapid Response Acute Stroke Protocol at Lee Memorial Health System, termed Code S, and he was director of stroke and vascular neurology there until 2014. Dr. Mauzun, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
We're talking about strokes and stroke prevention, and you can be part of the conversation, too, by calling 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, Dr. Mauzun, how much has our understanding of strokes changed since you got your medical degree at the University of Miami in 2000?
Oh, boy, a lot have changed. We went from the old era of seeing stroke patients and giving them aspirin and putting them in a hospital bed to now actively trying to help them to break the clot and save their brain. It's been a dramatic change since those days.
I don't really think that I've actually thought much about it since probably 2002. So what exactly is a stroke?
So a stroke is essentially is a blood clot in the artery. So when a blood clot ends up in one of the arteries in the brain and clogs up the blood flow to that part of the brain, that part of the brain essentially starts to die. And that's essentially what stroke is. So it's the equivalent of a heart attack in the heart.
Oh. So are there different kinds of strokes?
There's different kinds of strokes. There are strokes that happen because there's a blood clot that come from the heart. There are strokes that happen because there's a blood clot that comes from one of the other blood vessels. There are strokes that happen because there's tiny little vessels in the deep part of the brain that clog up. There are strokes of the young. There are strokes of the old. The notion that strokes is only an elderly type of a disease is very, very false. It can happen at any age.
How often is it an older person versus a younger person?
It most typically is a disease of the older folks, and when I say older, that's always a relative term. When I say older, that refers to beyond the age of 55, the stroke risk starts to increase because of the risk factors for atherosclerosis, for cholesterol, plaques, et cetera, et cetera. However, the mechanism of stroke is different from the younger people.
Yeah, so do they have symptoms that are different? Do they
symptoms
show
are
up
the same? Symptoms
exactly
are the, same.
The same, but are they misdiagnosed a lot because of kids?
They're misdiagnosed many times, and many times the patients also don't really pick it up. You know, there's a numb hand, numb foot, weak hand. They're not associated with a stroke in the younger folks, and unfortunately, they may not come to care in time.
So a numb hand is something that should strike fear in the heart.
So any sudden onset. So if people have a little bit of numbness and tingling in the hand from carpal tunnel or something else for a long time, that's different. But sudden onset of numbness or weakness in any of the extremities, facial numbness or weakness in the face, dizziness, particularly with imbalance, trouble with double vision, trouble with speaking, whether it's slurring of speech or trouble finding words. Those are really the main signs and symptoms of stroke. It can happen at any age, and we just got to be careful with that.
So are the signs and symptoms of stroke different depending on where the clot happens to be in the brain?
That's exactly right.
Because I'm thinking, different parts of the brain control. I'm not a neurologist, obviously. I'm sitting across from one. But different parts of the brain do different things. So, if you have a blood clot maybe up towards the front, does that show in symptoms the same way that a blood clot maybe towards the back would?
No, you're exactly right. So a blood clot and the part in the frontal lobe can cause weakness. In the back part called the parietal lobe can cause numbness. In the back part called the occipital lobe can cause trouble with seeing one side of your vision or the other. And what makes it more difficult is on the right side of the brain, some blood clots that go to their right brain can make people not understand the other part of the body. So the left side, they're not aware of what's going on the left side. So they may not even come to care in real time.
It's just – neurology is just really intriguing. I just always find it so interesting. So I wanted to ask you, what is a TIA? I understand it's some sort of a mini stroke.
So a TIA is transient ischemic attack, meaning it's a transient stroke-like event. So essentially, a blood clot can plug up an artery for a transient period of time, and then luckily it dissipates and blood flow comes back. And when blood flow comes back, then the symptoms go away. That's called a TIA. So it's not really a true stroke. Mm-hmm. A mini stroke, some people call it a mini stroke, but really stroke should be reserved for when people have a stroke.
Mm-hmm. So when that happens, though, and the blood flow is blocked to a certain part of the brain, can the brain recover from that if some cells start to die?
Right. So TIA by definition is recovery. So if the brain doesn't recover, it sustains a stroke. So a TIA by definition is a situation where the brain will recover. So it's a warning sign.
All right. So who's at most at risk? Is this something that lifestyle can have an impact on?
Lifestyle is the number one thing. You're exactly right. So, for people to prevent strokes, whether they've had a stroke in the past or not, diet and exercise is at the top of the game, and also following up with their primary care physicians on their risk factors for stroke that they may not be even aware of. High blood pressure, high cholesterol, and obesity and smoking and diabetes. And so those are really the risk factors for stroke. And then there's others. So irregular heart rhythm, AFib, can be a risk factor for stroke. And then sickle cell anemia can be a risk factor for stroke. There's others that we don't normally think about. So it's really, really imperative to discuss this on a regular basis with a primary care physician and have them screen for that.
So things that make the blood behave differently for different
Correct.
People might have an impact on that.
That's exactly right. And, in the younger folks, it's a little bit different. The younger folks, they don't really have the cholesterol. Plaques like the older folks do, but in kids even and young adults, we think of the conditions that can make the blood thick. So there is a handful of disorders that can cause the blood to thick, and so their first presentation can be a stroke or a heart attack or a blood clot in the lungs or a blood clot in the legs. And so that may be the very first time they would be aware of a condition like that.
What would make blood thick? What makes blood?
There's clotting factors that make the clot, and there's factors that make the clot dissolve. And so a mutation in the gene that affects the factors can potentially cause the blood clot to form abnormally.
So I wanted to talk about an acronym that most of us probably heard. This is probably the last time I thought about strokes too, was the public service announcements talk about FAST, F-A-S-T. What does that stand for? These are the signs and symptoms, I guess, right?
Yeah. So these are a quick acronym to understand as soon as you see something like this to call 911. So FACE, FAST, F-A-S-T, FACE, A for arm, S for speech, and T is the time to call 911. So there are two things here. Number one, those are quick signs and symptoms that you can recognize. If somebody has a funny face and facial droop and they're not speaking right and you want to test them a little bit, you have them bring out their arms and their arm drifts down, they have arm weakness and that. Those are quick ways to recognize stroke. And then the emphasis of the T is that you don't do anything but call 911 as soon as you see that.
And then in those agonizing 3 minutes while you're waiting for the first responders to get there, because they're fast.
They're fast.
But while you're waiting, is there anything that somebody can do?
Not really, to be honest, because some people will give aspirin to patients. Don't do that, because what we don't know at the time is if it's a bleeding stroke or blood clot kind of a stroke.
Okay.
And if it's a bleeding stroke, you give aspirin, it can actually make it worse. So you have to support your loved one until the EMS gets there.
Like no laying on your back and put your feet in the air, none of that?
Nothing like that, really.
That's not going to do
that
anything.
That hasn't really been a recommendation, right?
Okay. It's good to know, because everybody seems to think they have the idea of what they're going to
do.
So we're talking about strokes and stroke prevention. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. We always hear about men and women exhibiting different symptoms when it comes to a heart attack. Is there any difference between men and women when it comes to stroke symptoms, or is it always the same across the board?
It's the same across the board.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, that's a good question.
And why is time such a critical thing that you call 911 and get those first responders there?
Well, when you think about what happens with a stroke, right? So a blood clot blocks up the artery. The tissue around that artery starts to die. Now, there is a period of time that's reversible. So if that clot were to break somehow, whether by itself or with treatment, then the stroke isn't sustained. So people can actually – there's actually time to reverse that process and help people not to even get a stroke or get a smaller stroke. That's why it's so critical.
So what do you do when someone comes in with a stroke? And you can see, you've done a little imaging and you can see that there is a clot there. What do you do?
So there's a lot that happens when people come to care. Number one, the number one goal of the folks who come in real time, in good time, and that means that we would have to see these people within 3 to 4.5 hours of time from the onset of symptoms. So you need to come in as quickly as possible. When the goal there is to give them a treatment called TPA, clot buster medication, to break the clot as quickly as possible. So the sooner we break the clot, the better it is, because the more of a chance there is to save brain, right? And so what happens when people come in, there is a lab that is drawn. Patients are taken to CT scan to get a CAT scan. There's nurses and doctors that jump on the patient to treat the patient. There's a lot that happens. That's happened really fast. Now, the trick is to get this specialist, the neurologist who's trained in stroke, to bedside very quickly. And that's when you call the neurologist. Now, the neurologist takes time to get in the car and come to the hospital, and there's time is brain. So we created a program where we can actually put
time
robots.
Time is brain. I love that.
Time is brain.
Do you have a bumper sticker that says that on your car? Because you really should.
I didn't come up with that one, but yes, that is a
So time is that where you kind of started getting the idea about telemedicine?
That's exactly right. Right. So now we can get the specialist go on the video on robots in all across the United States. All across the United States and actually all across the world to help with the providers on ground, with ER docs and nurses on ground to treat the patients and guide them on what they would need to do to treat the patient and get that TPA as quickly as possible.
So, okay, I have a couple questions. When you want to knock up that blocked – that little blood clot, is there a risk when you get that thing knocked into smaller pieces that it could cause another problem somewhere else, or does it just completely dissipate pretty quick?
It dissipates or partially or fully, or sometimes it doesn't. So sometimes it works. So 1 out of 3 people actually do benefit from it, but there's a group of patients that don't benefit from it. But that is really the best treatment, number one. And now if that doesn't work – there's a technology that we have actually here at Lee Health too. If that doesn't work, there's technology to go ahead and retrieve the blood clot. So they can actually go in there. There's a specialist, interventionalist. They can actually go do an angiogram. Through an angiogram, they can actually go in there and remove the blood clot should it not respond to the medicine.
So it's like you always hear about people getting the stents put in their heart through a little tube. Is that kind of a deal?
Yeah, it's not truly a stent, but when they put
the stents, but you know, like using the same
angiogram.
Kind of like, okay.
Exactly, exactly.
Wow.
It's pretty cool.
That's pretty incredible.
So now we can create a group of stroke neurologists who are really good at what they do, and this is all they do all day long, and then respond to patients all across the United States and treat them like this.
I think it's just incredible that that's the way that it just became so important to get there so fast. So then you came up with the working in the telemedicine thing.
Correct.
So how established is this practice in the U.S.? Is it mainly with neurologists, or do they have other kinds of doctors that are doing the same thing?
Well, you know, telemedicine has boomed now, and there's psychiatrists, there's nephrologists, infectious disease, and neurology is one that makes the most sense from all the –
because time is brain.
Time is brain.
So has there been much resistance from healthcare facilities or other doctors, or has everybody pretty much openly embraced this?
There was resistance back in the day, probably a decade ago. Now it's accepted as mainstay.
It's mainstream.
Yeah.
Did insurance companies come on board pretty quick, or did they drag their feet?
They're always delayed. They drag their feet. I wish I could hear your last talk, but they always drag their feet.
They're not real quick to embrace anything that's going to cost anything.
That's going to cost anything.
So how big of a role do you think this is going to play in the future of medicine?
Oh, this is going to be the mainstay of the treatments for stroke. There is no other way to do it.
So somebody could have a stroke and have a neurologist that worked on them and worked them through the emergency phase and may never meet them face-to-face.
Well, we meet them sort of face-to-face through the virtual
Skype
route,
Skype-to-Skype
Skype kind of thing, but never beyond that, correct.
So your company, do you just do only neurology with this?
Right now, we're doing mainly telestroke and teleneurology, correct.
Telestroke. That is just – I just can't believe that even exists. Yeah.
Now, I mean, the truth of it is there is neurologists there in the hospital too, so we kind of work with all of them. But to get the neurologist, stroke neurologist fast and immediately to bedside, you need to have a program like this.
Yeah, it's pretty critical to have somebody that just – that's all they do.
Yep.
You know? How many doctors do you have working with you right now?
We have about 30 plus, 32 or something like that.
Are they all here?
They're across the United States. So, you know, the hurricane came and we didn't lose the connection for a second. We had doctors across the United States.
So they can be based anywhere?
They can be based anywhere in the United States, in the mainland.
Can you describe for me a typical use of your service? Like what happened? Do you just – you get the phone call from, you know, maybe St. Louis Regional? I don't know.
Yeah. So what typically happens is ambulance will call. We have a patient who's coming to the hospital. They radio that into the hospital. The hospital will call us, say, ETA of 3 minutes, patient is coming. We get the call and the physician gets assigned very quickly. Physician comes on the screen and waits for the patient to come in. So we're there right at the beginning. We talk to the EMS and we get the history. We do the quick exam with the ER doctor. Patient rolls into CT scan and we're waiting for the patient to come back. We talk to the families. We talk to nursing homes. Get more of a history. When they come back, we're ready to go.
So there's a computer monitor.
Mm-hmm. With a camera attached to it.
With a camera. Okay, so am I envisioning like a robot type thing?
It's really a robot. It's really a robot. Some of the robots we can remotely access and actually move them, and some of the robots are carts that have to be moved by help on ground.
Oh, so like somebody going along with the hospital patient, the patient's bed in the hospital.
Correct. The robots don't have arms; they can't press any buttons, but they do everything else.
What happened? The robot hit the wrong button again. That could be a disaster. So, but you have a screen and a face, and you have a presence there with the person, so they kind of feel like they know you almost.
Oh yeah.
I mean, if they're alert, you know, and then the family gets to talk to you too.
Absolutely.
So does that help, I guess, then with families that are trying to wrap their head around what's going on with their loved one to be able to see someone instead of just maybe sending emails back and forth or something?
Yeah, that helps a whole lot. You know, at that moment, they're also scared as to what is going on. Now they see a stroke specialist come on the screen with the ER doctors, with the providers on ground, and they're all helping to treat the patients. It's very satisfying.
It's just – mind-blowing, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
I guess probably not a good acronym thing to say, but it's just unbelievable that you're able to be there
cool.
And be from anywhere.
Absolutely. And now what we're doing is we're putting the telemedicine in ambulances. So now we can actually see the patient in New Hampshire. That's what we're doing in New Hampshire. We're actually seeing the patients in the ambulances prior to their arrival to the hospital. So we're actually calling the hospital saying, okay, this looks like the real thing. Get your CT ready. This looks like we have to move fast. And that's actually been very helpful for us as well.
So that's shaving how many minutes or hours off of the treatment?
You got it. Absolutely right.
Like every minute, like you said, is so critical. So if they know at the hospital to have the CT scan ready to go for when this guy rolls in.
Right. Absolutely. It shaves a lot of time and it saves a lot of brains. And we're getting we haven't really established a number of patients enough to publish it, but we're getting there. We're publishing it.
So you mean how many patients you've currently worked on so far?
Right.
How long has this company of yours been around?
2014 when we started the operations. And now we're across the United States in 15 different states and 110 hospitals across the United States. 110 hospitals across the United States. We're based out of right here in Fort Myers.
So does the hospital make the investment in the robot that goes along with the patient?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
And do you give them the, I guess, the technology to make that happen or the
– Yeah, we don't do the technology part. The hospital will get that. We are the physicians that use the technology.
Okay. And so it's basically the connection that you have to make.
Correct. Exactly right.
Wow. So we started this conversation because of your involvement with World Stroke Day. So I want to close up today with your thoughts on the future of care and prevention. We mentioned at the beginning of the show that things have really come a long way since 2000. How much more can it improve?
Things have come a long way in the way the providers are and the physicians are looking at stroke. Unfortunately, stroke is really still a major cause of disability and morbidity and mortality. You know, every 40 seconds, someone in the United States has a stroke, and every 4 minutes, somebody dies of a stroke. Every 40 minutes, somebody dies of a stroke, and 40 seconds, somebody has a stroke, and 4 minutes, someone dies of a stroke. So it's phenomenal what's happening. And that part really hasn't gotten a whole lot better. People are still getting strokes.
Is it prevention or awareness of getting on it and being aware of the fact that it's happening? I'm sure that there are people out there that just don't think there's anything wrong.
It's more the awareness. I think there's more awareness now than before. But there's still is a long ways to go.
You mean as far as getting people to understand
what
understand.
It is? In numb hands, you cannot ignore it. In numb leg, you cannot ignore it. You got to come in. Chest pain is easy. You have chest pain, you come into care. Numbness, weakness, trouble with vision. People don't understand that could be stroke.
Because they don't seem like that. I mean, sometimes, you know, your arm goes numb because you sat on it weird or you laid weird. And you don't want to be that guy that's running to the ER every 10 minutes either.
Yeah, exactly right. But again, sudden onset is what is bothersome. And, you know, you can have a little bit of a tingle in the finger. But if your arm is not working suddenly or is completely numb, that should raise a red flag.
And then also having that relationship with your doctor ahead of time, your primary care physician who knows your background and as far as things that could be causing you to have blood that's thicker than average.
Correct. So particularly in the younger folks, you need to have the workup done to understand why you have the stroke. And then there's conditions that cause the blood to thicken. You need to have that done. That's really when you see a specialist, when you see a neurologist. Primary care physicians are really good at screening for risk factors. And, you know, there are patients that come into care with stroke and they say, you know, I don't have a doctor. I've never been taking my medications. I've never taken a medication for hypertension. I don't have it. But they never go see a doctor. And they come in with a blood pressure of 220 over 110, and they have a stroke. So it's really, really important for us to follow up with our physicians.
Are there any things that happen that kind of precede a stroke? You know, we hear about heart attack, and usually, you know, it's because somebody who's not been physically active in years decides to go play around a basketball and has a heart attack. Does anything like that kind of contribute to maybe someone having a stroke, or is it just completely luck of the draw or bad luck of the draw?
The predispositions to stroke are things that are common sense with lifestyle and diet more than anything else.
But now, there aren't any like events that, you know, maybe you went out and played around a basketball. Could that loosen something up and cause something to
really.
Get?
Not really. Now, if you have an accident, if you have a bad accident and you tear one of the arteries in the neck, then that can cause a blood clot that can go upstairs and cause a stroke. That's different. Mm-hmm. So trauma can cause stroke, but those are the situations. For instance, in kids, the monkey bars. Hate those monkey bars.
Oh.
People fall from monkey bars, get a dissection of their arteries in the neck. Not good stuff.
Oof. All right. Well, that's all the time we have got for today, but I want to thank my guest for the segment, Fort Myers-based neurologist Dr. Nima Mauzun. Really interesting conversation. It was so great talking to you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much.
He is the CEO of Telespecialist, Dr. Mauzun. Really appreciate it. I also want to thank our earlier guest today, healthcare navigator Marilyn Gregory. And for links to any of the information that we talked about on the show today, be sure to check out WGCUnews.org. Our show today was produced by Rachel Iacovone, Mike Inari, and yours truly. Our director is Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.